Jenna Christensen, 26 years old, wrote, "I automated most of my finances so that I didn't really need to worry about budgeting each month. The biggest accomplishment for me is not having to think about finances each week. I probably review my investments and think about my spending habits a few times a year." Do more before doing less. I don't know about you, but I plan to do less and less work as I go through my life. When I meet people on a career path that'll have them working more, not less, I'm always confused. That's like being a real-life Mario Brother, where every level you beat means your life gets progressively more difficult. Why would you want that? That's why I love systems. You front-load the work now, then you get to benefit for years and years. By investing a little now, we don't have to invest a lot later. Of course, that's easier said than done. Somehow, we just never get around to consistently managing our money. And let's be honest, that will probably never change. Because who really cares about managing money? It's about as appealing as cleaning the garage every week for the rest of your life. We dream of having an automated system that handles most of our to-dos for us, something that just works. You can make this dream come true if you follow my advice about automating. This is all driven by a principle I'll call the curve of doing more before doing less. And the way that it works is most of us take these big things in our lives, like personal finance, and we say, "Yeah, I gotta get around to that one of these days." Instead of taking specific action, we delay and delay and procrastinate. That's normal. It's human. No need to beat ourselves up about it. But there is a change you can make. And that change is going from that first chapter of life, of doing nothing except worrying, to actually taking steps to set up a system. And once you do that, once you add a little bit of extra work up front, you will benefit and coast for the rest of your life. That is the beauty of front-loading the work now. This is as much about where to invest your time as it is about where to put your money. Sure, setting up an automatic money flow will take you a few hours. And yes, it would be easier to do nothing, but that would mean that you'd have to manage your money constantly for the rest of your life. By spending a few hours up front, you'll end up saving huge amounts of time over the long term. Your money flow will be automatic, and each dollar that comes in will be routed to the right account in your conscious spending plan from chapter 4, and you won't have to think about it at all. The payoff for these few hours is huge, because this automatic system will let you focus on the fun parts in life. No more worrying about whether you paid off that bill or whether you're going to be overdrawn again. You'll start to see money as a tool for getting what you want, without the manual drudgery of tracking categories and transferring money from one account to another. Lisa Lunsford, 33 years old, wrote, "I read the book at 23 when I had $17,000 in savings. I set up a robust system of automated savings for long-term goals like retirement, emergency savings, and short to medium-term goals like car repairs, vacation, even Christmas gifts. 10 years later, I have $170,000 saved. I've also used the book to get the best deal when buying a car and negotiating cell phone bills, saving hundreds of dollars." The power of defaults. We know people are incredibly lazy, and we know that people will do whatever requires no work, often at their own financial expense. Just think about how many people lose thousands of dollars per year by not taking advantage of 401k matches alone. How much more money do we lose from inaction overall? The key to taking action is making your decisions automatic. You think you'll actually do the work each week? No, you won't. You don't care. Sure, you might care right now, but in 2 weeks, you'll be back to Twitter and Netflix and Reddit. Nobody really cares about managing their money. Hell, even I don't care. Get away from me. Endless mailings from banks and investment accounts. Your money management must happen by default. We've already talked about this in reference to 401ks, but now we're going to apply it to every dollar you make. You'll be making your contributions to your savings and investment accounts grow passively with no action required. In fact, by setting up an automatic payment plan, you actually make it difficult to stop the contributions to your retirement account. Not because you can't, You can adjust your system anytime you want, but because you're lazy, and you won't. Hey, I'm lazy too. You just have to know how to take advantage of it. Once you set this beautiful system up, it is so hands-off that you could get decapitated by a Komodo dragon. It's going to take your head and go off for a snack in the trees. And your beautiful money system would continue transferring money from account to account by default. A ghost-like reminder of your financial prescience. Haunting, but pretty cool. David Bach, the author of The Automatic Millionaire, wrote, "If you want to build wealth over your lifetime, the only sure way to do it is to get your plan on autopilot and make everything that's financially important in your life automatic." I recommend that people automate a handful of things in their financial lives. You can set it up in less than an hour and then go back to your life. How to spend only 90 minutes a month managing your money. I hope I've convinced you by now that automation is the way to go. In Chapter 4, you set up the basic system of your conscious spending plan that gave you an idea of where you're going to distribute your money. As a refresher, here are the rough percentages assigned to the four categories in the conscious spending plan. Fixed costs, like rent, utilities, and debt, about 50 to 60% of take-home pay. Investments, like a 401k or a Roth IRA, 10% of take-home pay. Savings goals, like vacation, gifts, a down payment for a house, or cash for an unexpected expense, about 5 to 10% of take-home pay. And as always, my favorite, guilt-free spending money, like eating out, taking friends out for a round of drinks, going to the movies, buying clothes, etc. That's 20 to 35%. Now let's take your conscious spending plan and make it automatic. To do this, I use a concept called the next $100. This means, where will the next $100 you make go? Will it all go to your investment account? Will you allocate 10% to your savings account? Well, most people just shrug. They don't really think about where the next $100 they make will be allocated, which means it gets thoughtlessly spent, and I end up having to sob uncontrollably. But there is a better way. It involves actually using the guidelines that you established in your conscious spending plan. If you did things right in Chapter 4, you already know how much money you have to contribute to your fixed costs, and therefore how much is left over for investments, savings, and spending money. So if you made $100 and your plan resembled the example I just gave you, you might put $60 towards your fixed costs, $10 into your investment account, and $10 into savings. And then guess what? You'd get the remaining $20 guilt-free to spend on whatever you want. That's pretty cool. Well, it gets even better, because once everything is automated, that money will be shunted from your checking account right into the appropriate accounts without even thinking about it. To see how this works, let's use my friend Michelle as an example. Michelle gets paid once a month. Her employer automatically deducts 5% of her pay and puts it directly into her 401k. By the way, she set that up by talking to her HR department. The rest of Michelle's paycheck goes to her checking account via direct deposit. Now, to keep things simple, I'm not going to include taxes here, but you can control how much your employer withholds from each paycheck by speaking to your HR department. About a day later, her automatic money flow begins transferring money out of her checking account. Her Roth IRA retirement account will pull 5% of her salary for itself. That Roth IRA contribution, combined with her 401k contribution, will complete her 10% of take-home pay for investing. 1% will go to a wedding sub-savings account, 2% to a house down payment sub-savings account, and 2% is earmarked for her emergency fund. Those numbers take care of her monthly savings goals, with a total of 5% of take-home pay going into savings. Her system also automatically pays her fixed costs. She set it up so that most of her subscriptions and bills are automatically paid by her credit card. Some of these bills can't be put on credit card, for example, utilities and loans, so they're automatically paid out of her checking account. Finally, her credit card company automatically emails her a copy of her bill for a 5-minute review. After she's reviewed it, the bill is also automatically paid in full directly from her checking account. The money that remains in her account is there for guilt-free spending. She knows that no matter what, she's already hit her savings and investing goals before she spends a cent of her guilt-free spending money, so she can truly enjoy buying what she wants. Now, to make sure she doesn't overspend, she's focused on two big wins: eating out and new clothes. She sets alerts in a software tool called You Need a Budget, also known as YNAB, to notify her if she goes over her spending goals, and she keeps a reserve of $500 in her checking account just in case. The couple of times she did go over her spending, she paid herself back using her unexpected expenses money from her savings account. To track spending more easily, she uses her credit card to pay for all of her fun stuff as often as possible. She knows from her spending trends that she tends to spend about $100 a month in cash. That's usually for coffee and tips, so she includes that in her guilt-free spending. No need to track receipts or manually enter data. By the middle of the month, Michelle's calendar reminds her to check her financial software and make sure she's within her limits for her spending money. If she's doing fine, great, thumbs up, she gets on with her life. If she's over her limit, she decides what she needs to cut back on to stay on track for the month. Luckily, she has 15 days to get it right. So in a given month, she might politely pass on an invitation to eat out once. Boom, she's back on track. By the end of the month, she's spent less than 2 hours monitoring her finances. But think about what she's accomplished. She's invested 10%. She's saved 5%, specifically in sub-savings accounts for her wedding, her house down payment, and her emergency fund. She's also paid all of her bills on time, paid her credit card in full, and spent exactly what she wanted to spend. She had to say no only once, and it wasn't even a big deal. In fact, none of it was. Jennifer Chang, 32 years old, wrote, "I spend about an hour per month managing my money, paying bills, checking the balance on my credit card and my bank accounts, and watching a few holdings in my portfolio. But I'm not an active trader. I just like to maintain situational awareness. Once a month, I might evaluate my savings plan to see if I can plan a vacation or make a larger purchase." Kyle Slattery, 30 years old, wrote, "Using a tool like You Need a Budget gives me a more detailed view of my finances. In YNAB, it's super easy to mark money that's available for discretionary spending versus needed for bills, and that really appeals to my analytical side." Common invisible scripts on automation. When it comes to automation, it sounds really good, yet almost none of us do it. Here's why. Invisible script. It feels like I have more control when I know I can invest when the market is down. What it means: I can understand being nervous about automating your finances. The good news is that you are in control. You can always check on it and stop or change any setting you want. More important, be honest. Have you actually invested consistently every month? Does all your money go where it should? Do you automatically rebalance? If the answer is no, you've lost money. Let's fix that. Invisible script. I only have a little money to start with. It doesn't seem worth it. What it means: start now and build the habit. As your income increases, your habits will be aligned and your system will automatically grow with you. Invisible script. I manually invest based on my variable income. It's hard to automate when my income can vary widely. What it means: I handle irregular income in this chapter. Stay tuned. Invisible script. The honest answer is because I don't know how. What it means: thank God. Finally, someone gives me a real answer, not some concocted bullshit about how they want control of their investments. We're talking about investment returns, people. There's nothing wrong with not knowing this stuff. Keep listening. I'll show you how to do it. Invisible script. The fees are lower when I do it myself. I have more control over where my money is going, or at least it feels like it. It's also a forced check-in on my goals and progress. What it means: feelings. Sometimes your feelings are finely tuned instincts that you should listen to. But other times, your feelings are capricious and misguided and lead you astray, and you should really follow the evidence. This is one of those cases. Bottom line, automating your finances will give you more time, more money, and higher investment returns. Create your automatic money flow. Now that you can see how it works, it's time to implement your automatic money flow. You'll start by linking all your accounts together. Then, you'll set up automatic transfers to happen on various days. As we go through this chapter, I'll assume that you're paid once a month, but I'll also cover slight tweaks that you can implement if you're paid bi-weekly or if you're a freelancer who's paid irregularly. To get set up, you'll need a complete list of all your accounts, their URLs, and your logins and passwords. As I mentioned, I use a LastPass account to securely store all this information. However you choose to store it, it's well worth taking a half hour to get all these handy account numbers in one place so you never have to do this again. Now here's a quick tip. If you don't already have direct deposit set up, talk to your HR rep and set it up with your checking account. This is pretty easy. It basically entails giving your checking account number to your employer. In addition, you need to get everything squared away with your 401k contribution. Ideally, you set your 401k up way back in Chapter 3, but if not, this is the time to do it. Even if you already have a 401k going, you may have to adjust the amount you contribute every month based on your brand new conscious spending plan. Julia Wagner, 28 years old, wrote, "I automated my finances and I'm saving for retirement, wedding, and emergencies with no extra thought. This has been revolutionary. I feel free to spend on different things each month, not concerning myself with low-level budgeting. When I read the book, I didn't think saving for a wedding was important, but now that I'm close to getting engaged and I see how expensive weddings are, I understand. My boyfriend only just came to this realization while I've been saving for years. This book definitely gave me a leg up." Link your accounts. Now it's time to link your accounts together so you can set up automatic transfers from one account to another. When you log into any of your accounts, you'll usually find an option called something like Link Accounts or Transfer or Set Up Payments. These are all the links that you need to make. If you haven't already done this, connect your paycheck to your 401k so it's automatically funded each month. Then, connect your checking account to your savings account. Next, connect your checking account to your investment account / Roth IRA. Do this from your investment account rather than from your bank account. Next, connect your credit card to any bills you've been paying via your checking account. And if you've actually been paying bills by writing checks with a pen, please understand that man has discovered fire and combustible engines, and join our modern times. For example, if you've been paying your cable bill by check each month, log in and switch it so that the bill is paid by your credit card instead. Some bills, like rent and loans, can't be paid using a credit card. Instead, link these regular bills to your checking account. You can do this by logging into the company's website and initiating the transfer from your checking account to the company. Finally, set it all up so that these credit card accounts are paid from your checking account. This is set up from your credit card's transfer page or link accounts page. You likely have a few payments that simply can't be automatically drawn from your checking account. For example, if you're renting from a little old lady, she may not have a sophisticated financial infrastructure, including a website where you can enter your checking account and automatically transfer it each month. I know, it's frustrating. Mildred, the landlord, does not offer this. However, you can still automate payment using your checking account's bill pay feature, which is free with almost every account. Here's how you do it. If you currently pay rent by writing a check and putting it in an envelope each month, instead log into your checking account and set up automatic bill pay for your rent. Your bank is now going to handle this for you. They're going to write a check for you each month and mail it to your landlord. Just make sure that you schedule it so it arrives in time for your rent deadline each month. Here's a summary of how to connect your accounts. Let me show you three accounts, your paycheck, your checking account, and your credit card, and I'll tell you what accounts they should fund. Let's start with your paycheck, which should fund your 401k and your checking account via direct deposit. Next up, your checking account should fund your Roth IRA, your savings account, which is divided into sub-savings goals, your credit card, fixed costs that don't allow credit card payment, like rent, and occasional spending cash. Finally, your credit card should fund your fixed costs and your guilt-free spending. Set up your automatic transfers. Now that all your accounts are linked, it's time to go back into your accounts and automate all transfers and payments. This is pretty simple. It's just a matter of working with each individual account's website to make sure your payment or transfer is set up for the amount you want and on the date you want. One key thing here is to pay attention to picking the right dates for your transfers. And this is really important, but people often overlook it. If you set up automatic transfers at weird times, it will inevitably necessitate more work. For example, if your credit card is due on the 1st of the month, but you don't get paid until the 15th, how does that work? If you don't synchronize all your bills, you'll have to pay things at different times, and that will require you to reconcile accounts, which you won't do. The easiest way to avoid this is to get all your bills on the same schedule. To accomplish this, gather all your bills together, call the companies, and ask them to switch your billing dates. Most of these will take about 5 minutes to do. Many of them can happen straight through the website. There may be a couple of months of odd billing as your accounts adjust, but it'll smooth itself out after that. If you're paid on the 1st of the month, I suggest switching all your bills to arrive on or around that time. Here's what you can say when you call these companies. Hi, I'm currently being billed on the 17th of each month, and I'd like to change that to the 1st of the month. Do I need to do anything besides ask right here on the phone? Of course, depending on your situation, you can request any billing date that would be easy for you. Now that you've got everything coming at the beginning of the month, it's time to actually go in and set up your transfers. Here's how to arrange the automatic money flow, assuming you get paid on the 1st of the month. On the 2nd of the month, part of your paycheck is automatically sent to your 401k. The remainder, which is called your take-home pay, is direct deposited into your checking account. Even though you're paid on the 1st, the money may not show up in your account until the 2nd, so be sure to account for that. Remember, you're treating your checking account like your email inbox. First, everything goes there, then it's filtered away to the appropriate place. Now, I would recommend that the first time you set this up, you leave a buffer of money, of let's say $500, in your checking account just in case a transfer doesn't go right. You can cash out that buffer after a couple of months. And don't worry, if something does go wrong, use the negotiation tips that I shared with you previously to get any overdraft fees waived. On the 5th of the month, automatic transfer to your savings account. Log into your savings account and set up an automatic transfer from your checking account to your savings account on the 5th of every month. Waiting until the 5th gives you some leeway. If for some reason your paycheck doesn't show up on the 1st of the month, you'll have 4 days to correct things or to cancel that month's automatic transfer. Don't just set up the transfer. Remember to set the amount too. To calculate that amount, use the percentage of your monthly income that you established for savings in your conscious spending plan. As a reminder, this is typically 5 to 10%. But if you can't afford that much right now, don't worry. Just set up an automatic transfer for $5 to prove to yourself that it works. The amount isn't important. $5 won't be missed, but once you see how it's all working together, it's much easier to increase that amount. Also on the 5th of the month, set up an automatic transfer to your Roth IRA. To set this up, log into your investment account and create an automatic transfer from your checking account to your investment account. Refer to your conscious spending plan to calculate the amount of that transfer. Ideally, it should be about 10% of your take-home pay minus the amount you sent to your 401k. On the 7th of the month, auto-pay for any monthly bills you have. Log into any regular payments you have, like cable, utilities, car payment, or student loans, and set up automatic payments to occur on the 7th of each month. I prefer to pay my bills using my credit card because I earn points, I get automatic consumer protection, and I can easily track my spending using tools like You Need a Budget. But if your merchant doesn't accept credit cards, they should let you pay the bill directly from your checking account. So set up an automatic payment from there if need be. Also on the 7th of each month, set up an automatic transfer to pay off your credit card. To do this, log into your credit card account and instruct it to draw money from your checking account and pay the credit card bill on the 7th of each month in full. Because your bill arrived on the 1st of the month, you will never incur late fees using this system. If you have credit card debt and you can't pay the bill in full, don't worry. You can still set up an automatic payment. Just make it for the monthly minimum or any other amount of your choice. By the way, while you're logged into your credit card account, also set up an email notification to send you a monthly link to your bill just so you can review it before the money is automatically transferred out of your checking account. This is really helpful in case your bill unexpectedly exceeds the amount available in your checking account. So this way you can adjust the amount you pay that month. Ryan Lett, who's 38 years old, wrote, "The automated investing principles have made saving so much easier. I used to debate which stocks to buy, how much, limit prices, etc. I was spending a lot of mental energy on these tasks and probably still being beaten regularly by the market or those who had significantly more time than me. I have a managed investment account as well, and the automation has beat the managed account for the last 8 years running." Here's a summary of when the money flows. On the first of the month, your salary is direct deposited into your checking account. On the second of the month, part of your salary goes into your 401k. On the fifth of the month, there's an automatic transfer from your checking account to your savings account. There's also an automatic transfer from your checking account to your Roth IRA. And on the seventh of the month, there's an automatic payment of bills from your checking account and credit card. And finally, an automatic transfer from your checking account to pay off your credit card bill. That is how the money flows. Tweaking the system for you. Now that's the basic automatic money flow schedule. Now, hey, you might be thinking, great if you have a regular income, but I'm not paid on a schedule like that. Maybe I'm not paid once a month. Maybe I'm paid irregularly. Well, the good news is that's not a problem. You can adjust that system to match your payment schedule. If you're paid twice a month, replicate the automatic money flow schedule on the 1st and the 15th with half the money each time. The key here is to make sure you pay your bills on time, which is why it's important to move your bills' due dates to the 1st of the month. Let me oversimplify this just for explanation's sake. In this system, if you're paid twice a month, you'll pay your bills with the first paycheck of the month, and then with the second paycheck, you'll fund your savings and investing accounts. I've also got two other options for you to use this system if you're paid twice a month. Another way to work this system is to do half the payments with one paycheck, like retirement and fixed costs, and half the payments with the second paycheck, like savings and guilt-free spending. Personally, I think this gets clunky. Another option is to save a buffer of money, which you can use to simulate getting paid once a month. Here, you're essentially using a pool of money to pay your bills and contribute to your savings and checking account, then getting paid back by your paycheck each month. Let me give you an example. If your take-home pay is $4,000 a month, or $2,000 bi-monthly, you could keep $6,000 in your checking account and follow the exact automation system that I outlined in this chapter. Why $6,000? Because each month, your automation system will begin transferring money for bills and saving and checking, and you want to build in a little extra in case something goes wrong, like your paycheck arriving late. If you can afford to do this, I personally love this system. It's a great way to simplify your system and simulate getting paid once a month, even if you get paid bi-monthly. If you have irregular income, I know lots of freelancers and entrepreneurs who earn $12,000 in a month and then nothing for the next 2 months. How can you deal with spiky income? Good news. This system will accommodate irregular income with no problem. You just need to take an extra step. Here's the quick summary of what you're going to do. In months where you make a lot, you're going to save and build a buffer for the slow months. Over time, you'll build enough of a buffer that you can simulate a stable income, letting you use this system as designed. Even in slow months, you'll be able to pay yourself from this buffer. Here's how you do it. First, and this is different from the conscious spending plan, you'll have to figure out how much you need to survive on each month. This is just the bare minimum I'm talking about. Rent, utilities, food, loan payment. Those are your bare bones monthly necessities. Take a second to write it down. Now, back to the conscious spending plan. Add a savings goal of 3 months of bare-bone income before you do any investing. Let me give you an example here. If you need $3,500 a month to live on, you'll need to have $10,500 in a savings buffer, which you can use to smooth out the months where you don't generate much income. The buffer should exist as a sub-account in your savings account. And to fund it, use money from two places. First, hold off on investing while you're setting up the buffer, and instead take any money you would have invested and send it to your savings account. Second, in good months, any extra dollar you make above that basic income should go into your buffer savings. Once you've saved up 3 months of money as a cushion, congratulations. And if you really want to go the extra mile, work towards a 6-month emergency fund. By now, you've built a stable buffer and you can simulate a stable income. Think about it. If you have a bad month, even a really bad month where you make nothing, you can easily cover your expenses. And when you have a really good month, you can simply rebuild towards your 3 or 6 month goal. Through automated savings, you have bought yourself time and stability. Now go back to a normal conscious spending plan where you send money to investing accounts. Because you're self-employed, you probably don't have access to a traditional 401k, but you can look into a solo 401k and a SEP IRA, which are great alternatives. Just keep in mind that it's probably wise to sock away a little more into your savings account in good months to make up for the less profitable ones. One final note on taxes. As a freelancer, you're responsible for your self-employment tax, which your employer would normally handle if you were a traditional employee. Self-employed taxes can get very tricky very quickly, so I'm going to give you my rule of thumb and then encourage you to talk to a professional. Since many freelancers don't know the rules around self-employed taxes, they can get surprised when tax time comes around. I've known a lot of freelancers who were absolutely stunned to owe unexpectedly large amounts for taxes. As a rule of thumb, you should set aside 40% of your income for taxes. Now, some people save 30%, but I like to be conservative. I think it's better to end up over-saving than owing money at the end of the year. Your bookkeeper can advise you on exactly how much to set aside and how to automate your quarterly payments, so see a professional. It's worth it. If you have an irregular income, I also recommend using You Need a Budget as a planning tool. Dan Schultz, 35 years old, wrote, "I automated my finances, and over 7 years, I've saved around $400,000. I also earned enough to max out my retirement accounts." Review your credit card bill. I pay with my credit card as much as possible because it lets me automatically download my transactions and categorize my spending. Plus, I get travel points and extra consumer protection, like free additional warranties for any electronic devices. Here's how I checked my system in the early days. I used to do a weekly 5-minute review of all the charges on my card. And if I took no action, my credit card reached into my checking account once a month and paid the full amount automatically. No late fees, no worries. If I did see an error, I just called my credit card company and got it fixed. Let's talk about those weekly reviews for just a second. I liked to keep an eye on my credit card charges whenever there was tipping involved, so I would keep my receipts whenever I went to restaurants and store them in a paper folder on my desk. Every Sunday night, I'd check the folder and spend about 5 minutes comparing my receipts with what my credit card's website said. I would just do a control F for the amount, for example, $43.35, and confirm that it was correct. If I wrote $43.35 as the full amount after a tip, but I saw that the restaurant had charged me $50, I knew someone was trying to make a quick buck off me. And in that case, you only need to ask yourself one question. WWAID, what would an Indian do? Answer, a quick call to the credit card company will resolve this. But here's how I check my system now. I don't do those weekly reviews to catch a $6 added tip anymore. The more experienced you get, the more you can spot unusual deviations to your own spending. And honestly, if someone adds $6 to a tip, it doesn't matter. Believe me, I know how weird that sounds. I built this system by being ultra aware of every transaction that ran through it. But eventually you realize that this system exists to help you focus on the big picture. And truthfully, in any meaningful system, there's always going to be a certain amount of waste. If someone adds $5 to my tip and the credit card company doesn't catch it, that's life. It's not that big of a deal. I've set up a system with the appropriate safeguards and reviews, but I know that there will inevitably be certain things that slip through the cracks. For me, that's okay, as long as I'm keeping my eyes on the big picture. When do I get to spend my money? Okay, you got your infrastructure set up. Each month, your money flows automatically to your investing accounts and your savings accounts. You even cut your spending by focusing on a couple of big wins. So when do you get to spend this money? What a great question. The only people who've ever asked me this are actually concerned about saving too much. And the answer is simple. Once you've gotten your money under control and you're hitting your targets, you absolutely should spend your leftover money. Look to your savings goals. If you don't have something in there for a vacation or a new snowboard, maybe you should. Otherwise, what is all this money for? Money exists for a reason, to let you do what you want to do. Yes, it's true, every dollar you spend now would be worth much more later, but living only for tomorrow is no way to live. Consider one investment that most people overlook, yourself. Think about traveling. How much will that be worth to you later? Or attending that conference that will expose you to the top people in your field. My friend Paul, for example, has a networking budget that he intentionally uses to travel and meet interesting people each year. If you invest in yourself, I've found that the potential return is limitless. If you're meeting your goals, another route you could take is to start saving less and increase the amount you allocate to your guilt-free spending. One final thing. I hope this doesn't sound too cheesy, but one of the best returns I've ever gotten has been with charity and philanthropy. Whether it's your time or your money, I cannot emphasize enough how important it is to give back, whether it's to your community or to the global community. Volunteer your time at a local school or a youth organization. In New York, for example, I volunteer through New York Cares, or donate to a charity that supports a cause that you like. For example, I've donated to Pencils of Promise. Saving too much is a good problem to have. Fortunately, there are great solutions too. Your money is now automatic. Congratulations! Your money management is now on autopilot. Not only are your bills paid automatically and on time, but you're actually saving and investing money each month. The beauty of this system is that it works without your involvement, and it's flexible enough to add or remove accounts anytime. You are now accumulating money by default. I love this system for three reasons. Your automated money flow takes advantage of human psychology. Listening to me right now, maybe you're motivated to manage your money. But imagine life in 3 months or 3 years. You'll get busy, distracted, and focused on other things. That's fine. That's normal. But your system will continue growing your money for you. This system has worked for hundreds of thousands of people, and it will work for you too. Your system will grow with you. You can contribute $100 a month and your system will just work. Now, imagine getting a series of raises and consistent returns from your investments and other unexpected income, such as a tax refund. In fact, imagine that you're contributing $10,000 a month or even $50,000 a month. Your system will still work beautifully. And finally, your system lets you go from hot to cool. One thing I love about this system is that it takes you out of the day-to-day. It takes you out of those emotionally hot decisions and lets you focus on longer-term, cool ones. For example, think about the way most people describe their daily purchases. They struggle to resist dessert. Listen to those words. Struggle, resist. Or they feel guilty about buying coffee. Or they admit to being bad if they splurge for a nice handbag. I hate those words. Money should be about all the good things it can do, not the bad. To do that, you can't agonize over thousands of micro decisions per month. You have to focus on the bigger picture. This system means you get to bring your vision of a rich life alive. I believe that you can tell a lot about your own values by where your money goes. As I always say, show me someone's calendar and their spending, and I'll show you their priorities. Now you have an answer to the question, what does your spending say about you? For example, I spend a lot on clothes, guilt-free. I have a pair of cashmere sweatpants that are insanely expensive. They also feel like you're wearing a cloud. When one of my friends found out how much they cost, he was aghast. And taken out of context, as a singular purchase, it's true. They are ridiculously expensive. But taken in the context of a full automation system, which includes saving and investing and contributing to charity, the pants are simply a guilt-free purchase that I love. No more words like crazy and ridiculous. These pants are just something I wanted and something I could afford, so I bought them. Of course, there's more to money than just extravagance. You can also use it to create memories and to experience true joy. When I got married, I sat down with my wife and we decided on the key things that were important to us. We're fortunate that both sets of our parents are together and healthy, and one of our dreams was to invite them to join us on our honeymoon. Well, at least part of it. We wanted to create these amazing memories together. So we invited them to Italy, and we took them on food tours and cooking classes and wine tastings. We basically just treated them like royalty. We knew we wanted to create the memories. To make it happen, we made a few tiny changes to our automatic money flow, and the money was redirected automatically. We will never forget seeing the four of them together with us, tasting new cheeses for the first time in their lives. This is what I mean when I say that money is a small but important part of living a rich life. Now, you might be wondering what's going to happen with your investment money. As it stands, it's currently growing each month as you contribute to your 401k and Roth IRA, but the money is still just sitting there. You need to put it to work by investing it in something. And in the next chapter, we'll talk about how you can become your own investment expert and how to get the best return on your investment money. Action steps, week 5. Number 1, list all your accounts in one place. This should probably take about an hour. As you start linking accounts to one another, you'll need to log into all of them. Make your life easier by getting all your login information in one place that you can access from home and from work. Number 2, link your accounts together. This will probably take you about 3 to 5 days. To set up your automatic money flow, link your accounts together. Connecting them is free and it's pretty quick, but allow 3 to 5 days for the accounts to verify the links. Number 3, set up your automatic money flow. This will take you about 5 hours. Once your accounts are linked together, set up the core of your automatic money flow, automatic payments. Your system will automatically send money to your investing accounts, your savings accounts, your fixed costs, and leave you money for your guilt-free spending. Remember, you'll want to reset your billing cycles so you can create a well-timed automatic money flow. Chapter 6. The myth of financial expertise. Why professional wine tasters and stock pickers are clueless and how you can beat them. If I invited you to a blind taste test of a $12 wine versus a $1,200 wine, could you tell the difference? In 2001, Frederic Brochet, a researcher at the University of Bordeaux, ran a study that sent shockwaves through the wine industry. Determined to understand how wine drinkers decided which wines they liked, he invited 57 recognized experts to evaluate 2 wines, one red, one white. After tasting the 2 wines, the experts described the red wine as intense, deep, and spicy, words commonly used to describe red wines. The white was described in equally standard terms, lively, fresh, and floral. But what none of these experts knew was that the 2 wines were exactly the same wine. Even more damning, the wines were actually both white wine. The red wine had been tinted with food coloring. Just think about this for a second. 57 wine experts couldn't even tell they were drinking 2 identical wines. There's something we need to talk about when it comes to experts. Americans love experts. We feel comforted when we see a tall, uniformed pilot behind the controls of a plane. We trust our doctors to prescribe the right medications, and we're confident that our lawyers will steer us through legal tangles. Of course, we love to devour the words of talking heads in the media. We're taught that experts deserve to be compensated for their training and experience. After all, we wouldn't hire someone off the street to build a house or remove our wisdom teeth, would we? All our lives, we've been taught to defer to experts, teachers, doctors, investment professionals. But ultimately, expertise is about results. You can have the fanciest degrees from the fanciest schools, but if you can't perform what you were hired to do, your expertise is meaningless. In our culture of worshiping experts, what have the results been? Well, when it comes to finances in America, they're pretty dismal. We've earned failing grades in financial literacy. Recent results show that high school students answered only 61% of questions correctly on the National Financial Literacy Test, while basic college students answered 69% right. Keep in mind, this is basic financial literacy. We think investing is about guessing the next best stock. It's not. And instead of enriching ourselves by saving and investing, most American households are in debt. Something is not right here. Now, when it comes to investing, I get it. It's easy to get overwhelmed by all the options. Small cap, mid cap, large cap stocks, REITs, bonds, growth value, blend funds, not to mention factoring in expense ratios, interest rates, allocation goals, and of course, diversification. That's why so many people say, can't I just hire someone to do this for me? This is a maddening question for me because in fact, financial experts are often no better at the job than amateurs. In fact, they're often worse. The vast majority of people, including you, can earn more than those so-called experts by investing on your own. No financial advisor, no fund manager, just automatic investments in low-cost funds, which I'll get into in the next chapter. So for the average investor, the value of financial expertise is a myth. There are several reasons for this that I will detail for you, but I urge you to think about how you treat the experts in your life. Do they deserve to be put on a pedestal? Do they deserve tens of thousands of your dollars in fees? If so, what kind of performance do you demand of them? I want to tell you a quick story about one of my students who went through a boot camp that I was offering on my website. He was a middle-aged man. He'd been investing with a financial advisor, and he was paying 1% in fees. Now, when I told him, oh boy, 1%, we're going to talk about that. He was confident that he was paying for expertise. But as I showed him some numbers through an investment calculator, he realized something and he truly internalized it. This 1% in fees that he was paying would end up costing him 28% of his returns. The math is not intuitive, but as I walked him through an investment calculator, he realized if he changed nothing, he would pay $158,000 to this advisor. For what? For mediocre advice that he could actually outperform himself. A 1% fee can equal a 28% reduction in your returns. That's money out of your pocket. In truth, being rich is within your control, not some expert's. How rich you are depends on the amount you're able to save and on your investment plan. Acknowledging this fact takes a lot of guts because it means admitting that there's no one else to blame if you're not rich. No advisors, no complicated investment strategy, no market conditions. But it also means that you can control exactly what happens to you and your money over the long term. You know what the most fun part of this book is for me? No, it's not the personal finance chance that I constantly wish I got when I was walking outside. Let's hear it for ASSETALLOCATION. It's not that. It's the disbelieving emails I've gotten after people have listened to this chapter. Whenever I point out how people waste their money by investing in expensive mutual funds or by relying on a financial advisor who generates below market returns, I get tons of emails that basically say the same thing. Ramit, you're full of it. Or there's no way that's true. Just look at my investment returns, not understanding how much they've made after factoring in taxes and fees. But surely they must be making great returns because they wouldn't continue investing if they weren't making lots of money, right? In this chapter, I'm going to show you how you can outperform the financial pundits by sidestepping their expertise and their fees and taking a simple approach to investing. It's not easy to admit that reliance on these so-called experts is largely ineffective, but stick with me. I've got the data to back it up, and I'll show you how to invest on your own. Experts can't guess where the market is going. Before we move on to discuss how you can beat the experts, let's look a little more deeply into how they operate and why their advice so often misses the mark. The most visible financial experts are pundits and portfolio managers, the people who choose specific stocks in mutual funds. They love to regale us with their predictions about where the market's going, up, down. They go on and on about interest rates and oil production and a butterfly flapping its wings in China and how it's going to affect the stock market. This forecasting is called timing the market. But the truth is, they simply cannot predict how high, how low, or even in which direction the market will go. I get emails from people wondering what I think about the energy sector, currency markets, or Google. Who knows? I don't, especially in the short term, and neither does anyone else. Unfortunately, the fact is nobody can predict where the market is going. Still, the talking heads on TV love it. They love to make grandiose predictions each day, and whether they're right or wrong, they're never held accountable for them. The media feeds off every little market fluctuation. One day, the pundits spread gloom and doom about a multi-hundred point loss in the market. Then, 3 days later, the front page is filled with images of hope and unicorns as the market climbs 500 points. While it is riveting to watch, but just step back and ask yourself, am I actually learning anything from this? Or am I just being overwhelmed by information about the market going up one day and going down another? More information is not always good, especially when it's not actionable and when it causes you to make errors in your investing. The key takeaway here is to completely ignore any predictions that pundits make. They simply do not know what will happen in the future. Even though you think they'd know better, fund managers also fall prey to financial hype. You can see this in the trading patterns of funds themselves. Mutual funds turn over stocks frequently, meaning they buy and sell stocks a lot, incurring trading fees, and if held outside a tax-advantaged account, taxes for you. The managers chase the latest hot stock, confident of their abilities to spot something that millions of others have not. What's more, they also demand extraordinary compensation. And despite that, fund managers across the board still fail to beat the market 75% of the time. You might say, but Ramit, my fund is different. The manager returned 80% over the last 2 years. Well, that's great, but just because someone beat the market for a few years doesn't mean they'll beat the market next year. In fact, starting in 2000, S&P Dow Jones Indices did a 16-year study and found that the fund managers who beat their benchmarks 1 year had an extremely difficult time getting similar returns the next year. Ryan Poirier, senior analyst at S&P Dow Jones Indices, said, if you have an active manager who beats the index 1 year, the chance is less than a coin flip that the manager will beat the index again next year. Let me give you another example. If I asked you to name the best stock from 2008 to 2018, what would you guess? Some people might guess a company like Google. What if I told you the answer was Domino's Pizza? It's true. Now, back in January 2008, if you invested $1,000 in Google stock, 10 years, it would have been worth a little over $3,000. And tripling your money in 10 years is fantastic. But if you'd taken that same $1,000 and purchased Domino's stock, your investment would have gone up to almost $18,000. Here's the problem. Nobody can consistently guess which funds or which stocks will outperform the market. They can't even guess which stocks will match it. Anyone who claims they can is lying. So ignore the pundits' predictions. Ignore once-in-a-lifetime freakish results. And ignore the last 1 or 2 years of a fund's performance. A fund manager might be able to perform really well over the short term. But over the long term, that manager will almost never beat the market, because of expenses, fees, and the growing mathematical difficulty of picking stocks that continue to outperform. When you're evaluating a fund, the only way to really gauge it is by looking at its track record for the last 10 years or more, and to factor in the costs. A startling example of how experts can't time the market. The media and its pundits know exactly how to get our attention. Flashy graphics, loud talking heads, and bold predictions about the market that almost never come true. These might be entertaining, but let's look at some actual data that's going to shock you. Putnam Investments studied the performance of the S&P 500 over 15 years, during which time the annualized return was 7.7%. They noted something amazing. During that 15-year period, if you missed the 10 best days of investing, those are the days where the stock market gained the most points, your return would have dropped from 7.7% to 2.96%. And if you missed the best 30 days, your returns would have dropped to negative 2.47%. Negative returns. In actual dollar values, if you'd invested $10,000 and kept your money in the market over those 15 years, you'd end up with $30,711. If you missed the 10 best investing days, you'd end up with $15,481. And if you missed the 30 best investing days, you'd end up with $6,873. That's less than you began with. This math is startling. It makes you wonder about the certainty of friends and pundits who say it's obvious that the market is going down. Ignore them. It may feel good to try to predict where the market's going to go, but candidly, when it comes to investing and compound interest, your feelings will lead you astray. The only long-term solution is to invest regularly, putting as much money as possible into low-cost, diversified funds, even in an economic downturn. This is why long-term investors have a phrase they use: focus on time in the market, not timing the market. How financial experts hide poor performance. As I've told you, the experts are often wrong. But you know what's even more irritating? They know how to cover their tracks, so we can't catch on to their failures. In fact, the entire financial industry is a lot sneakier than you'd imagine. One of the biggest tricks they use is to never admit they were wrong. Daniel Solon, author of the smartest investment book you'll ever read, describes a study that illustrates how financial ratings companies like Morningstar continue to give thumbs-up ratings even as the companies they purport to be evaluating crater and lose billions of dollars of shareholder value. Here's what the study found. 47 of the 50 advisory firms continued to advise investors to buy or hold shares in the companies up to the date the companies filed for bankruptcy. 12 of the 19 companies continued to receive buy or hold ratings on the actual date they filed for bankruptcy. Companies like Morningstar offer ratings of funds that are supposedly simple reflections of their value. But the idea of Morningstar's 5-star ratings is actually complete nonsense. Why? Well, there's two reasons. First, receiving 5 golden stars doesn't actually predict success. A study by researchers Christopher Blake and Matthew Morey showed that although low star ratings were on target in predicting poor performing stocks, the high star ratings were not accurate. They wrote, "For the most part, there is little statistical evidence that Morningstar's highest rated funds outperform the next to highest and median rated fund." Just because a company assigns 5 shiny stars to a fund doesn't mean it's going to perform well in the future. Second, and this one is really sneaky, when it comes to fund ratings, companies use something called survivorship bias to obscure the picture of how well a company is doing. Survivorship bias exists because funds that fail are not included in any future studies of fund performance. Why? For the simple reason that they don't exist anymore. I'll give you an example. A company may start 100 funds, but only have 50 left a couple of years later. Now the company can simply trumpet how effective their 50 funds are. But guess what? They're ignoring the other 50 funds that failed. They just erased them from history. In other words, when you see these articles called best 10 funds, it's just as important to think about what you're not seeing. The funds that closed down and have vanished from anyone's